Welcome, welcome everyone to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and Julie.
Hi everyone, I'm Christine Marie.
I'm the mama.
Yes, you are. I'm Julie. I'm the daughter.
That's right, you are. And don't you forget it. I'm going to put you in time out, girlfriend.
That's right. And listen, I know you like that a lot, so I will try to be on my best behavior tonight.
Thank you.
And you know, it's such a great night. We're going to have two, I'm going to use this word, but I'm going to use it with all capital letters and an exclamation point,
Okay.
Awesome guests tonight. Two awesome women.
I know.
Kick butt. And it's so interesting because tonight I'm coming with this radio show with such sweetness and eagerness to talk to these two lovely women. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm sad because this is our first radio show without our dear dog, Molly.
I know.
And
I know.
I don't have a bowl of food to entertain her while we're on the radio.
Well, she's such an energy dog. She's
she was,
for years and years, just as soon as we were on the radio, she knew to start barking. Asking for
attention,
anything.
and
we lost her on Tuesday.
Yeah. And the way she went was special and sweet, and I mean, only in the sense that...
Lots of grace,
because the vet just was happened to be here for her checkup, and we have a traveling vet, and it was lovely to have her, because she was not a dog that would want to...
No.
She was a dog.
She was our dog, and she couldn't go away to Chuck Wagon, which is an overnight place. She just wouldn't get out.
She's like, screw this, I'm doing it.
She was an alpha dog. She made up her mind 14 years ago that, I mean, we were the family that could take care of her, really.
Yes.
Because we adored her in spite of all her idiosyncrasies. And our hearts are broken today, but like Julie said, she went with such grace. It was just interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the vet was here in his little mobile vet mobile, and so it was like he came for her and he took her away. You know,
she just died of a little heart attack right there. It's like the stress of him coming. He was like, I'm not getting my nails clipped one more time.
Yeah, and she had been struggling for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
And we had many meetings on how to make the decision or what the decision should be. And she and the divine decided to take that decision from off our shoulders. And
it was just a sweet, it was grace everywhere. And so the lovelies out there,
you
know Molly Marie. You knew our dog Charlie Ray. They were brother and sister from a different mother.
Mothers from a different mother.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so you guys know that at the time, Charlie, you know, it's just the funniest thing when you are doing your work and you're, you know, not on the phone. They're angels and they're respectful. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a minute, Julie's on the phone. Or Julie's doing real work where she's talking to someone. Or Julie and, you know, Mommy are on doing a podcast or a radio show. Let's continue to bark. And so forth. So I'm going to go. So I want to share that with everybody.
We've got two candles lit for them, for both of them.
And so, in
their honor.
And now I really want to go to our guests because we have two awesome guests tonight. We have Dr. Tony LaMotta. Are you there, Dr. Tony?
I am here.
Oh, welcome, Dr. Tony. So lovely to have you tonight.
Story.
Oh, it's
you.
Thank you so much. And it's been a whirlwind of emotions come through because they are part of our life for 14, 15 years. And so it feels like an end of an era and so forth. But Dr. Tony, can I call you Dr. Tony?
You can just call me Tony, actually. That's great.
Okay, I will. But, you know, I feel your journey deserves a doctor in front of
it. I'm going to call you Dr. Tony.
Okay.
Your journey is... But I'm gonna toot your horn a little bit, if you don't mind, because I want all our lovelies to get a full picture of you here and the books that you've written and so forth. But Dr. Tony is a provocative and inspiring international professional speaker. She is the author of the number one best-selling book, Master Teachers, and highly regarded. She's a master teacher, highly regarded online life coach. She really is. Her book was What You Really Want Wants You. What You Really Want Wants You is her number one book. And Mom and I have said that before about this idea that what you really want wants you. So when I read your title, Dr. Tony, I was like, oh, thank you for bringing it out and just claiming it. Because it's like, yes, what you really want wants you. I also want to say this. Dr. Tony holds a doctorate in religious studies. She did a doctorate of divinity degree, 3 master's degrees, pastoral ministry, adult education, and mathematics. When, Dr. Tony, thank you for doing that. That's awesome.
Just to get a little bit of the other brain side in there.
Exactly. She also,
she's got more degrees than me, Julie.
I know. She also spent 10 years as an adjunct faculty member for Baker Online College in Michigan. She's just been this awesome, awesome, I want to call you a student and teacher because
yes,
you're just continuing to keep learning and mm-hmm. then keep sharing and keep teaching. And I just want to say I think you're just totally, totally awesome.
Well,
I
love this model,
that is
Dr.
The truth.
Tony.
I'm
this
more
lifelong,
of a student constantly.
Lifelong learning, you know.
And I can only teach what I've learned myself, so.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I want to go right into your website a little bit because I noticed on your website and all of your material, you use this image of a dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us the significance of that and how it relates to conscious aging? Because that's really what you're about. You're really about conscious aging right now and how we all can figure that out because we're all in this really weird world where we, like, are afraid to age.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And one of the things that's important about the dragonfly is that it is actually a deeper transformation even than the butterfly, because mm-hmm. the dragonfly comes from mud and totally transforms. But the reason I chose it as an image, or it chose me, I should say, is because I learned that the dragonfly doesn't get its true colors until it reaches maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated when I studied that and I saw that, mm-hmm. that the truth of the matter is most of us don't get our true colors until we mature. And so I think many people who feel like, oh, my God, I should have been there by now, like there was a place to be, you know, as we age, we actually become even more beautiful. And the dragonfly symbolizes that. The colors get brighter. They get more more translucent. And I think that's the same truth about each and every one of us. If we see it that way,
not only
rather
do our
than,
colors
you know, this
brighter,
is a time
but...
of decline and death.
Yeah.
So I love the dragonfly, and people give me dragonflies. Yesterday I got a paperweight with a dragonfly. I have pictures of them. If you ever saw my office, I'm sitting
damn,
here
looking
at a wall.
Damn, that's not, I was going to give you that for Christmas.
Well, Dr.
It's
Tom,
wonderful.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that I appreciate you saying that. This idea that shouldn't I have been there by now?
Right.
I think that a lot of people, at least when I'm talking to my friends, my clients, it's like I should have been there by now is a theme that runs through their consciousness and their, you know, what is their experience at this moment is I thought I should have been there by now. So thank you for addressing that thought that is in a lot of our programming. You know, how are you defining conscious aging?
Well, for me, becoming conscious, I think sometimes like we wake up and say, how did I get here? And being aware of the process and seeing it as a time of growth, a time of contribution, a time of fulfillment, and not as a time of diminishment and decline. I think the world is trying to tell us that, you know, to be old is not good. I mean, I get crazy when I hear the words anti-aging. I'm not anti-aging. You know, we think so conscious aging is the opposite of anti-aging. It's appreciating what the aging process can give us if we allow it to and see it as a time of great growth, see it as a time of joy and true colors rather than as a time of, you know, something's wrong here.
Yeah, and
where do you begin?
Yeah.
Where do you begin with all that?
Because there's going to be a lot of people going backwards, like, oh, well, I thought I really didn't want to age. Whatever that means, I really want to stay.
Well, exactly, and that's partly what society has told us. That's what the media tells us, that we don't want to age, and we want to hide our old people and put them somewhere else. And, you know, it's like if I'm a one-woman band to say, let's change that. And I'm not alone, fortunately. There are a lot of us out here saying, you know, we need to really relook at the way we have seen aging. And so, I mean, you said, where do we begin? I ask people to begin by taking a look at what the beliefs they have and what the fears they have, and to debunk the myths that are out there. I watched Dr. Oz the other day. I seldom turn that on, but I watched it, and he was talking about, you know, so many people think that our memory declines with age, and that is a myth. It is the disease that makes your memory decline, not the belief. But because we have a belief, there's been a study that by two women from Harvard actually did a study and say that we think that we're losing our memory, the fear that we have that we're going to do that actually causes it to happen. So I invite people, as the first step of becoming conscious, is to get in touch with what are those fears, what are those beliefs, and part of what I teach people are like about 25 different myths, that we bust those myths and say, this is just not true. I mean, I take people through basically a four-step process I like to look at when I'm talking about conscious aging, and the fears and the beliefs is step one. Step two is about a life review, which is saying, you know, it's a good idea, and I like people to do this in midlife, not wait until you're 60 or 70, although if that's where you are, that's a good time too. But to do this while you're starting in midlife, to say, let me look at what I need to clean up from the past. So is there anything from my past that's incomplete? But then also, in the words of one of my favorite teachers, was a man named Ira Progoff, who wrote a book called The Intensive Journal, and he ran programs called The Intensive Journal. One of his favorite lines was, what does my life wish to become? And in doing a life review, I teach people to look at what are the seeds of possibility that are still inherent in some of the things that seem to be incomplete. So it's a chance to look back and clean up the past. It's a chance to look forward and saying, what's still left? And then my favorite topic is the spirituality of aging. And as we go on, maybe I'll get to share a little bit more about this, but the spirituality of aging, to me, the aging process itself is an opportunity for spiritual growth. Oh, so everything that we see as a problem about aging can either be seen as a challenge or a problem, or it can be seen as an opportunity for spiritual growth. And I'll get into a little bit more of that later. And then the final stage, I think, that I take people through is to set some intentions and actually even look at your time of your death. And I have a dear friend who just died at the age of 95. She wrote her own obituary. She was not afraid of death. She wanted people to know, you know, what it is she wanted to leave behind. And it was just a beautiful opportunity to watch her. And I encourage people that the more we look at that, the more we plan and prepare for our own death, the more we know how we want to live our life. So that's a lot in a big nutshell.
And
those four steps are the things that, to me, make me conscious. That's when I get through all those, then I'm really aging consciously and not just
growing
old.
Right. And yet, the programming, the constant programming that we experience from the world is really just the opposite. And, boy, talk about in some ways, you have to go inward. You have to do that spiritual work because, it would be a Herculean task to overcome the programming and to not feel less than or feel lack, from
exactly.
What the world
tells you. When people say to me, I am 67, and I don't look it, I have to tell you, I look much younger. And people think it's a great compliment when they say, oh, you don't look your age, but there would be something wrong with looking my age. And I often say to them, I wouldn't care, if I did look my age. What does that mean? You don't look your age as a compliment means it's not a good thing to look old.
Right.
I actually have a doctor who used to say to me, I can help you look younger. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why is that such an important thing? Keep me healthy, keep me, whole, but it's not about looking younger. And, our culture in the United States especially denigrates aging, whereas the Chinese, for example, revere the elderly. There are so many cultures, and I think that's something to study. They are much healthier. There are more people living, centenarians, living into their hundreds in China than anywhere else in the world. And I think it's because there is a great emphasis on the beauty and the gift of aging rather than, you know, what we see.
Mm. Dr. Tony, you're exactly right. It is because they respected our, when we respect the aging process, then it can flourish more. But I was just thinking, in my makeup bag alone, I have a product called Spackle. And basically, I put it on my face before I even put my makeup on so that I don't see a darn wrinkle anywhere, because God forbid I have a wrinkle on my face. And that's kind of how the programming begins and so forth. But
talk about myths.
And I'm
sure there's many myths that people have about aging.
You're good, it's fine. But, you know, my wrinkles show a lot of the smiles that I've had in my life have created some deep lines in my face, and they show some of the history, and it's something that I treasure rather than say, wait a minute, we have to look and get rid of this. And it depends on why we're doing those things, you know, what we're fearing about, you know, what we're saying to the world about, you know, we have to look a certain age. I mean, even there are books out that say, you know, 60 is the new 30. Well, I don't want to be 30 anymore. I've been here. You know, 60 is the new 60.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but it's something that I think is going to take a while before we really understand and come to appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, that aging is something that is a part of life and an important part of life.
Absolutely.
You know, interesting.
So, I know Christine mentioned this before, but I just want to say, can you talk about some of like the main myths that people have about aging? What do you feel like at least in this culture?
Well, I think one of them is you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and you just mentioned how I'm a lifelong learner, and I think when you are a lifelong learner, you realize that there's so much more you can continue to learn. Mm-hmm. And the population now, their older population going back to school, when I taught at the two universities online that I taught at, they were all adults returning to school. And it was so much, let's say, more rewarding to teach them than it was when I taught the younger people, because they had a deep appreciation of why they were learning what they were learning. And so there was no memory lag. There was no problem in learning that I think so many people think is out there. And I mentioned before, the loss of memory is probably the biggest myth that that we need to debunk. And as I said, there were two women from Harvard who did a study to show that the only way you lose your memory is by disease, not because you're getting older. I mean, it was interesting because the same Dr. Oz show, it just, I love that when I turn on TV and something on there is exactly what I'm thinking. But he was talking about how to keep your brain continue functioning. And when we use our brain and we keep learning new things, it actually expands. And he said the best way to make sure you never lose your memory is to learn how to juggle. I haven't started that yet, but I thought it was quite
interesting. Juggle.
It uses parts of our brain that we never thought to use. And as long as we are using those parts of our brain, I mean, my mother is still fairly alert at 95, and I think it's because she did crossword puzzles every day of her life.
Of course.
You know, kept her memory alive and kept her, you know, brain functioning alive. But
Dr. Tony,
scientific studies that show that is the biggest myth. I mean, I think that's everybody's biggest fear, is that they're going to lose their memory.
You're exactly right, especially with the focus on so many diseases that cause memory loss. We're always like, oh, if this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. And like you said, the fear brings it closer into reality. But Dr. Tony, I'm going to share something with you, since you're sharing so much with me and I feel like I'm learning so much, about juggling. And to all our lovelies out there, the best way to start juggling is to juggle with scarves.
Yes.
It is the best way, because they stay in that...
they're slow.
They're slower.
Yes.
They fall. They have that 1 second where it's like, it's not falling. So I have time for my brain to catch up. And
Julie just started juggling about a year ago, so she can tell you that.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you use scarves, so all the lovelies out there, we should have a video. We'll all be doing juggling with scarves and expanding our brain and our
good.
Our yes, it's awesome.
So, Julie, let's talk about successful aging and good role models on aging. Want to?
Well, you know, there's so many good models out there. I have one that I would love to talk to about for a moment, because she is 104 years old.
Whoa.
And she's a woman I visit every week, and she teaches me so much, and she's an incredible model. And two things that she has said to me that really stand out. One day something happened, I don't know, something happened in me. She lives in an assisted living facility, and she said, you know, I could go around complaining about this. And she said, I realized one day that as you get older, sometimes life gets smaller, so things look like they're more important. And the only reason I'm complaining is because my life has gotten smaller. And she said, you know, I started to realize that if I start complaining, I'd be very unhappy, and I would much rather be happy, so I'm not going to complain. Mm-hmm. And she had me laughing, but she just accepts what is. And probably the biggest spiritual lesson I think we can all learn in life, and probably every spiritual teacher teaches this, is that life is about living in the now and loving what is. I mean, another thing she tells me all the time, and she shows it by her life, she said, you know, I love to travel. And she and her husband were both pilots, so they did a lot of flying, a lot of traveling all over the world. And she said, every now and then I think it would be fun to travel. And then she said, no, you know what, I'm too tired now to do that. And so I want to just enjoy what I had. And I have so many happy memories that right now I am satisfied with life exactly as it is. And, I mean, I go home, that echoes in my mind all the time.
Yes.
Because, truthfully, I'm not always satisfied with life exactly as it is. And to me, that's the model of the beautiful aging process, where it's when we really learn to live in the moment and to accept this is what it is. And
you know,
I think
Dr.
there are a lot
Tony,
of other models of people who just don't, I mean, it's going to sound awful, but they just don't care what other people think anymore. And I just think that starts to happen to us in the 40s and 50s. It's like, wait a minute, what you think of me is none of my business. And
that's
so
really true.
It doesn't matter. And but I love the message and the models that I see of accepting exactly life as it is right now. If we could learn that lesson, I think we've got it made.
You know, we have Julie, tell Dr. Tony about Aunt Goldie. This is she's not our aunt, but she's a friend of yours, and she resided in the nursing home. She passed away recently, but she was that kind of a spirit too. She was in her 90s, and she was like best friends with her, you know, the person she shared the room with, and they put their beds together, and, you know,
crossword puzzles together.
They did, crossword puzzles together, and they were the one that, you know, if there was going to be singing in the nursing home, that they would lead it. I mean, it was just you're right, there's certain role models out there that have, you know, successfully hurdled that, you know, old curmudgeon, and, you know, they're sullen, and you know, I mean, if you've ever spent, I mean, I, my mom was in the nursing home for about 8 or 9 years, and so during that time, I met a lot of, you know, people in nursing home, and there's a whole continuum of, you know, personalities, but the ones that you go, wow, you know, how they navigated, you know, that, you know, particular, you know, challenge, you know, in terms
of
aging. You're just in awe.
I'm also thinking
of
people who are, I was going to say, much younger. She's in her 80s. Barbara Marx Hubbard, I don't know if you know that name.
Yes, of course.
A futurist, a spiritual teacher. Barbara is, you know, out there changing the world, and she has been doing this. She's speaking all over the world. She does a lot less traveling now than she did. She's doing a lot more teleseminars because it's, you know, a lot easier for her to do that. But she has always been a role model for me of what's possible.
Oh, me
you know,
too. I love her.
She never gives up. She teaches conscious evolution, how we are here. The planet is constantly evolving, and we as human beings are constantly evolving too. And she's just a living model to me of what that means as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I just want to say thank you so much for being who you are. Your light shines so bright, and I'm just feeling so happy about getting older every day right now. I'm just like, I feel like I'm up for the challenge, but I don't feel the challenge. I feel just talking to you, being in your presence, it's like, wow, I feel this honor in making this spiritual journey and deepening that. And I just want to say real quick,
Deborah is with us. Deborah is with us.
I know that you have a special offer for our listeners, so I want to make sure they hear that. But you also mentioned the idea that you said that your role model said that I'm complaining because my world's too small.
Yes.
And I think wherever we're at, that's a good message, because if you're complaining a lot, going, maybe I need to make my world a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I just heard that through your talking. I'm like, I love that line as well. So mm-hmm. thank you for sharing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
And, you know, Dr. Tony, it's a good time, you know, when we start aging. It's a good time to get out of ourselves. I know that you know, I was feeling low because of, you know, Molly, and I wanted to naturally mourn her. And I got this letter from one of the charities that I, you know, donate to. And, you know, it spoke about, you know, people that are, you know, have real needs, you know. And it gave me... you know, great pleasure that I can, you know, help, you know, alleviate some of that now. That when I was younger, I really couldn't, and a lot of times I didn't even see that need, you know.
Exactly, and that's exactly one of the, you know, generativity is what all the psychologists talk about as one of the stages of growing older, is when we really discover all the ways we can give back. I mean,
yeah.
Working for me, I work with hospice and go and visit some of these people. It's, you know, you ever have a bad day, you can look at some of their lives and you
right.
say, oh, my glory, I have it so well. It's, you know,
right.
everything's so good in my life compared to your.
Yes.
But it's an opportunity to give back, and usually people have more means when they're a little older and they can give more.
Yes.
But even just we have more time and we can give our time as well.
Right, right.
So, Dr. Tony, I know that I want everybody to go to your website, TonyLamotta.com, TonyLamotta.com. You can pick up her book there.
And you go to /consciousaging.
Oh, conscious aging. Great.
One
Great.
Word.
Okay.
And there's a video of me, and it invites you to sign up your name, and then you'll start getting a bunch of free gifts about conscious aging and about the four steps that I talked about here as well. And then I even send in a few days later, you'll get a free meditation that I think helps you to recognize what I was talking about before, about just being in the moment and living with who am I? Who am I really? And is it the things I think I'm supposed to have done? You know, the only people I know that are really sad as people who are older, who are people who are wishing they could still be who they were instead of being who they are right now. The saddest people are those who are longing to have something that they used to have rather than appreciating, as my friend has taught me so well. It's like, I had it, and I can find so many other, you know, good things in my life right now.
Well,
so,
I want to invite you. I want to invite you back sometime, because I think we need this topic is so ripe, and I think we need more time to really just let's all three of us get into it and really let's really, you know, plumb the depths of this and how
I would love to. There's lots more. You know, when I first started doing this, I'm such a learner. I sat and read like 50 books until they all were saying the same thing. But I kept saying, no, but they're not saying what I'm saying here. And there are very few people who really talk about the spirituality of aging. That would be a great topic to look at.
I would love that. And really, I mean, we could talk you and I could talk just about the dragonfly itself and how to hold that symbol and let that symbol resonate in our hearts and see what really blossoms from that, you know. And I hope that you'll take us up on that, Dr. Tony.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Oh, great, great.
This has been a delight. I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
We have. That's why I want you to come back, because I think, girlfriend, we're just scratching the surface here. We really are. There's a I can just feel the beginning of the healing, and just the lightening of this whole, this thing that we carry on our shoulder called aging, and this, and the lightness of, you know, conscious aging, and learning, and for the first time to, hey, let's not wear makeup today. Let's just let's just go the way we want to go.
I want to say thank you, Dr. Tony, for being on the show today.
And make sure, Julie, that people know where they can go get that, because I already signed up.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Oh,
yes. And you can go to TonyLamada.com/consciousaging. And, or you can go to TonyLamada.com, too. She's right on the page video. You can sign up right there to start your journey of conscious aging. Dr. Tony, do you still take private clients as well? Because I'm sure a lot of our...
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, and if they go there on that same page, I do speaking engagements, I do private clients, and they can click on any of those things, and my phone number's there. They can feel free to call or email me and make arrangements, because I love to work with people, especially people in midlife who are wanting to get clear about where they want to be, and rather than what they want to do, I help people with their being, their beingness.
That's so lovely. And like Julie said, we just honor your work and want to support you in any way we can, and contribute too. We're there for you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night, Dr. Tony.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Tony.
You so much. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, what a great interview. One of two tonight. And we always have great interviews, but...
We're very, very,
very blessed. I know. Tonight, I just feel... Here's the thing. You know, we're doing the interviews. We're part of Life with Girlfriends. I know our lovelies are listening out there. And at the end of our shows, I just feel like dancing. I feel like an upgrade.
And she's not lying.
A download. I'm like, girlfriend, let's go out. Let's turn the music on. Mm-hmm. And let's dance and sing to... Because if you are listening to other crap out there, like, you know, other just news and talk radio in some sense, because I do listen to it sometimes, there are points where you're just going, wait a minute, what world am I buying into here?
Right.
And today I know I'm buying into a world of abundance and expansion and just like vitality,
yes.
Lightness and fun and
yes.
Awesome and so forth.
And the idea that vitality is evolving,
yes.
You know, it doesn't have to look like it does in your 20s, or guys all testosterone-y or whatever, but that that your vitality can evolve and
yes.
That you can bloom.
Right, but I don't want a guy with testosterone either.
I know.
Just
I
put
know.
It out there now, girlfriend. Just
I
put it
know.
Out there.
Okay.
So I'm going to, can I hope that...
Bring Deborah on.
Deborah, are you on?
I am.
Hi, Deborah.
How are
Hi
you,
there.
Girlfriend?
I've been listening to this exciting conversation. I'm very pleased with it. It's really inspiring to hear the talk about conscious aging and doing it in a spiritual way.
Yes. Oh, we just adore Dr. Tony, and it's such a joy when, because I know we're going to talk to you about your spiritual garden in a sense, just this idea of aging in that container of, you know, spirituality and how we can plumb the depths of that and find out who we really are. And a lot of times, you know, especially as we age, there are things that we have to give up to become more fully who we are, you know.
Mm.
So, but anyway, Joe, I'm going to let you
take,
okay, I'm gonna let you take care of Deborah.
Well, I'm going to introduce her formally.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just real quick. I mean, because we could just start talking right now, and everybody's like, well, who is Deborah? Who is she? But Deborah Moffitt, you are an author, a teacher. You lead workshops on writing and spirituality in the United States as well as Europe. Awesome. You know, because in my mind, I'm always like, God, I'd love to go to Europe and do workshops. That'd be kind of cool. Way I'd pay for my trip, right? She's also a faculty member of the Sophia Institute and the Esalen Institute, and author of the award-winning book Awake in the World. And she's here to talk about her book,
Garden of Bliss.
But I just want to tell you, this book has touched me so deeply, Cultivating the Inner Landscape for Self-Discovery. And I want to say, first of all, I love the way you write, but I love how you laid out your book, because it laid out so easily for us. And there are, to all the lovelies out there, Garden of Bliss, you can pick it up. And sometimes you're just going, I just need a little tidbit of something. You know, what am I looking for? And, you know, today I picked up and it was talking about food, nurturing food, and going to my Garden of Bliss and connecting with the right food choices and the high vibrational foods and how do I honor and all this stuff. I'm like going, I needed to read that today. I'm like, that's awesome. So I just wanted to give my props first, Deborah, mm-hmm. about how this book came about or how you wrote this book down. So I just want to say thank you. And just first of all, you know, what was your inspiration for this book and how did you discover your Garden of Bliss?
Well, the first thing I discovered was the secret garden. And that led to the Garden of Bliss. And I lived in Europe, and I've lived in Europe off and on for quite some time. And when I would have conversations with people, occasionally they would say, if I were talking about something quite deep and touching on the spiritual, they would say, well, keep that for your secret garden. And in French, it would come up as the Jardin Secret. And then I went to Italy, and I heard people tell me, well, you should keep that in Italian. They would say it for your Giardino Segreto. And I went, oh, it's coming up again. Mm-hmm. And I discovered, as I started to do some research, because this really started to fascinate me as a symbol, that it was an actual place that popped up during the Middle Ages, during this time of great chaos. And, you know, there was like, political chaos and power struggles and droughts and plague. And the only things that could really survive in terms of healing herbs and beautiful flowers and fruit trees were in these protected secret gardens. So they would be in these walled areas, sometimes in monasteries or in medieval castle grounds. And you could access it if you had the key or if you had some special way of getting in. And it's this wonderful, wonderful symbol to me for the sacred space within us. So it's an external representation, a physical representation of that sacred space within us. And I love to take people through these guided visualizations where they discover that space within them and the things that pop up, the things that they discover about themselves and the peace that we can reconnect with by going in there is really incredible, the peace and the joy. And then by cultivating that through these different stages, because it's not all roses and blossoms. Sometimes there are pests and there are, you know, there are challenges. But by cultivating it and clearing it out, it's possible to eventually get to the Garden of Bliss.
Hmm. Well, thank you for saying that, because
it's hard not to hear you talk about that and not go there. I'm actually there now, and you do feel connected. You feel the oneness of it all, and you feel. I'm sure you do too, but what I'm feeling is the season of it.
Yes. Yeah, and it's, you know, we all go through seasons of change, and it's a wonderful experience to acknowledge those, because we tend to think, or the mind tends to get stuck in things always being the same and in sameness. But whenever we move into the inner landscape, I personally had to acknowledge that whenever I started, I lived in a desert. I mean, mm-hmm. I was in an emotional, spiritual desert, and that's what my first dream was whenever I came up. And so the book is literally about cultivating one's soul growth and one's inner landscape, mm-hmm. And doing that through tapping into intuition and paying attention to synchronicity and listening to dreams and trusting that more feminine flow of things.
Yes.
So by the seasons and symbols are ways to do that. Mm. And so if one is in a spiritual drought or a dry season, which could be spring or it could be fall, it's by cultivating that inner sacred space through regular periods of meditation and just consciously bringing awareness to that inner space, it's possible to begin to cultivate it and bring in, to me, meditation is like bringing in spiritual waters. It's like the fountains, the spiritual fountains begin to open up and still us from within rather than needing to be filled up from with things from outside, like buying more stuff.
Right. And you're right. And the spiritual waters have many layers. I know, like two nights ago, I had it was a dream, but it was more, I guess, what I heard was, it was toward the, you know, the, like, maybe around 4 or 5 in the morning, I heard the word restoration. And then it came, after that came the word before. And then after that, about another half an hour, I got the word more. So I was putting it together. And so it said, like, so I will restore what you had before, and then I will give you more. Mm-hmm. And that felt so right. Now, I could, you know, take it to mean one thing that I was kind of working on in my life. But mm-hmm. as I decided to really stay with that, you know, Deborah, it's just getting to be more layered and to have a lot more texture. And you're right. If you stay with the flow of that, and you get much more meaning than just, oh, there was like a hard answer, you know, that this, you know, dream gave me.
It tends to be more flowing. Your dream actually reminds me of, and the words actually remind me of the story of Job, who lost so many things and had the feeling that the divine had turned away and everything was restored to him, but with more than he had before. And that is interesting to take those things and begin to explore them on deeper and deeper levels.
And I'll be very candid. I have, you know, compared my life at some points to that story.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting?
How interesting. Yeah, because that's immediately what came up to me was that story of Job.
Yeah.
Which is so powerful because his friends were saying, curse the divine and
yeah.
and look somewhere else because this is not working for you. And
right.
part of the process of spiritual growth I have experienced personally, and I know many of us have, is a shedding of things that we had and that we thought we were mm-hmm. to grow into something much deeper and richer, as you said. So in my book, I write about living on the French Riviera and having this beautiful sea view apartment and having so much stuff. I mean, had, you know, oriental carpets and
right.
and beautiful porcelains and silver and, you know, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost and gave away almost all of that stuff. And my job as well, and my husband, who is now my ex-husband, all those things that I thought I was, mm-hmm. I thought I was an international business executive, I thought I was a wife, I thought I was someone who possessed all these things, all those things left and disappeared.
Right.
And I was left standing naked somewhat is how I felt. And I had the dreams I write about, the dreams of feeling mm-hmm. naked as all of that was stripped away. And the process was learning who I was beyond those physical material things. And it's a scary process, or for me it was a scary process,
mm-hmm.
but it's very enriching, and as I have grown through that, and I feel as we grow through that, we discover our real maturity as we discover that we are peace, and we are beauty, and we are harmony, and we are all these other qualities that are the subtle qualities that no amount of money can purchase. And no, we can't possess those through going to the store and saying, I want to buy a can of peace.
I was hoping that would be on the middle shelf. That's what I wanted. And not
what
even on
that?
The clearance items. Yeah. You know, you're right. You're talking about real gravitas. You're talking about that which gives you not just knowledge, but deep wisdom, you know, Solomon wisdom and,
yeah.
and you know, you, that kind of stuff. And I remember, too, when reading the book, you talk about, like, there's happiness, and then there's joy, And then there's, is it peace, or then bliss comes at the end?
There's pleasure first. We tend to mix these things up and put everything in one basket, but it's really much more subtle and profound. You were talking about the levels of the water, and it's the same with this question of happiness. We see, you know, people pursuing happiness, but there are really many different levels of it. So the first step or the first stage is really pleasure. So, you know, what gives me physical pleasure? And that might be, you know, eating a chocolate bar. for me, that's maybe more bordering on joy, but everybody's different.
You go, girlfriend. We understand.
So the first step is pleasure. So, you know, what gives me physical pleasure? It might be a kiss. It can be things that are very physical, a hot bath. Happiness starts to move a little bit deeper. So it might be a little more long term. So maybe it's a longer hot bath. I'm not sure. Or, you know, it might be buying a house or, you know, creating a home. And then joy is something that begins to tap into our spiritual self, and it begins to well up from inside. So pleasure and happiness depend on outer things and physical things, while joy and bliss come from within us, and they're really deeply spiritual experiences. And I find joy through dance and movement a great deal, and that allows a lot of this joyful energy to flow through. And then bliss is something that it's like it radiates like the sun, and it's something that we just are. The ancient wisdom texts, like the Vedas, say that we are bliss, that is our true nature. We have just, it's like clouds that obscure the sun. We have just forgotten it. And through digging deeper through these different levels of cultivating and excavating, we find the bliss eventually. It takes time and patience.
And it takes, you know, sometimes we're able to access it for a few seconds, and, you know, it's enough at that moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I know. It that's exactly how I feel. It's like, you know, if I hit it and I go, wow, that I had a moment of bliss, and it sustains, and it makes you, you know, want to keep on keeping on, you know, when, you know, and it's, I know we're kind of a little bit off of script, but how do you, if you had to tell someone to keep their bliss or to find their bliss in the midst of, you know, not so great circumstances, what's the best wisdom piece that you could give them?
You know, that it's really challenging, and even though I write about spiritual things, I find it challenging whenever things around us are falling apart. I recently went through a divorce and had some big moves and that kind of thing.
Right.
And for me, staying in contact with that inner wisdom and bliss is not always easy. I find that the easiest way to do it is, for me, keeping a regular meditation schedule,
mm-hmm.
even when I feel awful, whenever I'm experiencing grief, when I'm experiencing anxiety, I still sit down and keep the regular meditation schedule, same place, same time, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it helps for me to release the clouds, so the clouds of sadness, the clouds of anger and frustration, so that I can tap into that deeper place of bliss. And then eventually they move through, and then I get to the bliss again. But if I don't sit
down...
Mm-hmm. What was that?
I said in your book you wrote a line, and I love this line, because so many times we think that when we're on our spiritual journey, it kind of prevents us from going through those hard times. They're not going to come near us because we're such spiritual beings. And you used this line, you said, like, your spiritual practice is like an insurance policy. And I took it two ways, because sometimes we think, like, you know, I'm doing my spiritual practice so this doesn't happen, and yet I'm doing this spiritual practice so that when it does happen, I can go there quicker. I can find my bliss or my peace quicker, because no matter who we are, the chaos, the decay or whatever, the conflicts, the grief, will always come. I mean, it's just life. It's just nature. And so
I love that line mm-hmm. that you said. It was a very cool line.
Yeah, and also what Deborah's saying too, is there is real power in ritual.
Yes.
In mm-hmm. having that daily practice, that daily mm-hmm. discipline, that so that you can access these places with more ease and grace and quicker, and that you can also see, like you, Deborah spoke of these things. They're clouds. They do pass by.
Yes.
They do move.
Mm-hmm. And having that regular space to sit down and meditate, even when you feel terrible, mm-hmm. is like an anchor. It's something that gives a discipline and anchors one's life, even when things seem to be falling apart. So it's like keeping a commitment to oneself, that higher mm-hmm. self, that soul self that I write about, that I also call the inner gardener. And it really helps to maintain that that center, that grounded sense of self.
Definitely.
Mm. That I'm not the experience. I'm not the clouds. I'm not all the stuff that's going on. I'm not the emotions. I'm something deeper mm-hmm. and broader and vaster. I just need to stay connected to that.
Yeah. Mm. I just went there. That was so good.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I love your voice. Your voice reminds me of a dear friend, and I every time I hear you talk, I'm brought back to that dear friend. So I'm also loving your voice. You know, Deborah, in your book, you also talk about this metaphor, and you've talked about water, and because you lived in the Riviera and so forth, you talked about learning how to dive. And when you're thinking about your inner work, thinking about how there could be a current up above and wind that could move you around, but below you stay steady. And I love that metaphor. And also, as I'm reading your book, I also felt a little bit like, boy, Deborah, you're doing a lot of stuff. You're doing a lot of cool stuff. You're jumping out of airplanes. You're diving in the Mediterranean. You're married a Frenchman. I'm like, wow, Deborah. I'm like, you're awesome and you're cool. And I'm like, you know, I tried to do diving once in a pool with my uncle one time. And he's like, you can do it, Julie. And I'm like, great. And he was blind. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. I'm cool. And he's like my great uncle. Mom's like, what uncle is this? He's like my great grandpa. Anyway, he was like, and I'm like, I'm trying the pool, and all of a sudden I'm going, I shouldn't be breathing underwater. This is wrong.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. It's shocking, isn't it?
It really is. So I just want to say I'm doing like I'm honoring you. That you're so cool. That's awesome. So someday I may jump out of a plane. I don't know.
Yeah, Julie's got like, Mom, she's so cool. How did she get so cool?
Jumping out of the plane felt pretty scary at the time, I can tell you. I didn't sleep for 3 nights. And then the day that it happened, I was above Saint-Tropez in the plane. It was a little plane with pink flamingos painted on the wings. It looked like it could fall apart.
That gives you a sense of security, right?
Well, I write about it. That's one of my rituals as well. It was a leap of faith because I was terrified.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was terrified of leaving the corporate situation. I had this really good corporate job. I was making lots of money. I was traveling all over the world doing business. And I knew that my soul was yearning to do something else, and I had to get out of it. I had to start writing. And the way I did that was to face the thing that terrified me the most, which was jumping out of a plane. and so I found myself with my feet dangling out of the clouds, strapped to a Frenchman and free-falling from 14,000 feet. So.
Yeah, that's either a great metaphor or a great Harlequin romance novel. I don't know. I started off jumping out of an airplane.
Strapped to a Frenchman.
I'm okay with that.
He was fresh. He kissed me on the cheek before we fell out of the plane.
Awesome.
And then when you landed, you had a baguette, some wine, and some cheese.
Well, when I landed about a month later, I got a golden parachute out of the company that I was working for.
Ah,
talk about great synchronicities. So,
absolutely.
Very,
talk about a leap of faith and the golden parachute. Right.
Yes.
Deborah, what could you share with our lovelies as we're kind of wind down this awesome interview. And I also want to say that we want to have you back on again, too.
Yeah, we do. Oh, my gosh.
I'd love to.
We can't wait. Oh, my gosh. Because, again, we just started just beginning to talk about this, really. So, Julie?
Yes.
Is a website can you give?
Yes. So, DeborahMoffitt.com is her website, Deborah Moffitt, MoffitT.com. And, Deborah, are you still there?
Yes, I am, definitely.
Oh, good. Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure I thought I might have
I know, everything sounded so quiet all of a sudden.
Yes. Yeah. So you go to DeborahMoffitt.com, and you can go to books, and she has all her books there. She's got three books. We're talking about The Secret Garden, a gateway to reviving the spirit and finding bliss. But she also has other books, mm-hmm. like Awaken the World, 108 Practices to Live a Divinely Inspired mm-hmm. Life.
But it really, this Garden of Bliss I love because
yes.
the inner gardener, it's really about care of the soul. It's
yes.
really about listening, right, Deborah, to those little messages, the dreams, and you know, getting to know that voice, that inner voice in us.
Yeah, and I just want to say, Deborah, thank you so much for being on Life of the Girlfriends tonight. I really do want to have you on again because I think, like Mom just said, we have just, scratch the surface of this and the Garden of Bliss and all of us and, well, excuse me, the Garden of Bliss is where I want to be. my little secret garden inside of me that's growing in that Garden of Bliss. I can't wait.
How to turn it from a desert into this beautiful, lush garden.
Yes. And I just want to say, everybody out there, Deborah works well with metaphors. She talks about composting and cultivating. I'm like, oh, you go, girl. You just go, girl. I love the way you write. So I just want to say thank you so
thank
much.
You.
And I want to say thank you to all the lovelies out there. We've had a great time tonight.
Thank you, Deborah.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you.
Yes, you did too.
Of course. You got to come back.
That's it.
Love to.
That is awesome. So I think we're everybody
needs a good girlfriend. We gotta learn that song.
We have it.
Everybody needs a good girlfriend. Sun goes down at night.
Everybody needs a good girlfriend to make the wrong team right.
Woo!
Have a great day, everyone. Blessings, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks.